Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 231. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, happy fall, almost.
Almost. And Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
Where did you get that jazzy music?
That's very cool music. I like that. We use that every day, every week. I like that.
Music Alley. Remember this right. PodSafe music place? And I
like that.
Troll. I've got probably 50 songs in my producer playlist, and I actually download them and listen to them too because they're just great tunes.
That rocks. I like that.
Yeah, and everybody can hear the whole song if you listen to the end of the show because it's on the end of the show. So
nice. Very see, you're exposing like, music.
Yeah. Okay. I want to ask you guys. Do you remember the fabulous movie, The Graduate, with Dustin Hoffman?
Of course. Yeah.
And the scene where they're standing by the pool and the guy puts his arm around him and says one word, plastics.
Yeah.
Well, see, it came true because look what Apple did. See? See?
Johnny, I've even been born when that movie. Well, he was probably a little kid when that movie came out.
Yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily what they were referencing in that, but... Yeah, if you want to feel that way, Sam, or Steve, feel free to feel that way.
It's okay. The future.
Yeah.
It's the future. Yeah. Let's
do. Sam, were you thinking about your son's future?
Yeah,
is that what was going
reason,
on?
I'm not sure why I called you Sam.
But. It's clever to keep the iPhone 5 relevant and being able to advertise those as something new, which they couldn't do, the last year's model, they typically just lower the price and they don't advertise.
So right.
Now they're going to advertise all the time, you know?
Yep.
So,
it's so
very clever.
How much of a bath did you guys take on your stock?
It goes up. It goes down.
Well, I sold a bunch at 503 a while back. And,
there you go.
I wanted to sell some. My wife goes, should we sell some more when it hit 508 again? But we didn't. But
and you got those nice dividends coming in every quarter too. So,
yeah,
you
know, yeah, that doesn't hurt.
That'll buy you some nice iPhones right there.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I just want to go to work for Apple as an executive and get 20, 30 million in shares price.
Wow. There you go.
In warrants. So
nice.
But that's normal though. It's the market always sells off on the news.
Right. Right. Right.
Buy on the rumor, sell on the news.
Exactly. Well, you know what, though? I mean, honest to God, as we've always said, if Apple doesn't come out with a replicator and a holodeck, people are disappointed.
That's right.
Well, you have to say, though, that this was pretty disappointing all around.
I thought it was, it was disappointing from the standpoint, Tim, that all the rumors came true. So it's
very, very predictable. There was nothing that was shocking or even mildly surprising, with the exception of giving away the iWork suite on iOS devices.
Right, right.
That was the only thing you couldn't predict.
Yeah.
But that even makes sense from a calculated perspective. So everything else was, we had known about it beforehand. The pricing was a lot higher than everyone expected for the 5C. They are being very clever, and I think it's going to sell a ton. So,
but also remember that, the whole thing about the A7 chip, but the M7 coprocessor to handle phone functions, the accelerometer and all these other things that people are saying, for health and fitness. Well, it's health and fitness and gaming and all mm-hmm. kinds of things. So
that's only on the higher end model, though.
That's correct.
Right. That's only the 5S. Right. Yeah. But, there's just so many ways that things can leak out now with the supply chain that they have that it's just too hard for them to control and keep everything secret anymore, it seems, than what it was back in the Steve Jobs days,
Yeah.
It kind of bugged me that there aren't any surprises, I mean, are we done with the one more thing? I mean, is that a Steve Jobsism and Tim Cook just isn't going to do it anymore?
Well, I think that was the sort of the same thing. I mean, the one more thing was Steve's you know, I'm keeping it to myself until, you know, we have the presentation. And I don't know if he could still do that these days and still keep that sort of thing to himself. But he was that kind of controlling guy that could pull that off. I don't think necessarily Tim Cook is that guy. But I agree with you, Graham. I miss the one more thing. I miss the surprise at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Or the benefit at the end, or, you know, something only the head kahuna can do. And yeah, it was disappointing in that way. It was disappointing in the fact that, yeah, we knew everything that was coming up. And now if you didn't know that was coming, that was all pretty interesting stuff. I mean,
I don't know if it was so for the normal mainstream people, because it's all very, they're moving in a very predictable fashion. They have the smallest phones on the market by a large margin. I mean, the average Android phone is now almost 5 inches. So they're in this very small niche, and, you know, they have to come out with a larger unit, but it looks like they're going to wait another year.
Well, I don't know why. I don't think they have to come out. I really don't.
I don't either.
The market's going to demand it.
I don't think so. I just don't think so. But then again, I didn't think they'd necessarily do a plastic iPhone. So
those that will all be using Android devices then.
Well, okay, but let me play devil's advocate on the fact that you know, the Bluetooth 4.0, the Bluetooth low energy,
BLE,
which is what that iBeacons is all about, really can push them into wearable computing. So whether it's a watch or whether it's something else or whether it's a different connection to an iPad or other device, it seems to me that the direction to have phones get bigger and bigger is gonna swing back, because as more and more things can leverage the computing power of the phone, the less you'll have to actually have on the phone or in the phone, because you won't be looking at it all the time for everything. Gee, what time is it? I pull out my phone. Gee, what's the weather like? I pull out my phone. You know, that that kind of thing.
Out of your huge pocket.
No, out of my man purse.
And you know, and there's nothing that can be done about the average size of hands. I mean, yeah, okay, people with big hands might like big phones. I don't, you know, and I'm not going to, you know, clamor to get a larger phone.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see the uptake of the 5S and the 5C is going to show that a lot of people don't care about that, you know.
I wasn't sure, and I haven't had a chance to look at the specs. So what's the spec difference between the S and the C? I didn't spend a lot of time doing that. So
screen size, you mean?
No, just the spec of specs of the phone, yeah.
Yeah, the C is basically the iPhone 5 guts.
Right.
Essentially, yeah. So it's repackaged.
With a different front-facing camera, was that it? Or no, I didn't catch that.
It's the same. It's just in a slightly larger case, so they can put a bigger battery. So it gets better battery than the 5 does.
Yeah. So the cameras are identical rear-facing to the 5. Okay.
You know, but you could also go out and get your Crocs case for it.
Well, you could.
Yeah, what's the deal with... I mean, that was a kind of a surprising thing where they have this case with these little connect four dot things.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe it was to sort of mute the impact of the what's the new Google phone, the Moto X. The Moto X,
yeah.
The one that you can design and
I don't know. I think it's just a way to make more money, but it was interesting where they showed that new commercial where they had all these people all over the world using the 5C. And I think it was only one of the clips had it in a case. All the other ones were just naked phones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think all their commercials, though, pretty much are naked phones.
They normally wouldn't show a case, except now they're selling cases.
Yeah, they're selling.
Which you can get a new wrinkle, right?
You can get a leather colored case, from what I gathered.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, I was looking.
And you can get that for the 5S. Am I right?
Right. Yeah. And I think those are $49. And are the non leather ones $39?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
$39, something like that. Yeah. The Crocs case.
Listen, Steve.
Oh, okay. Is that what they're calling it? Okay.
Steve alluded to this iBeacon thing, and I don't think anybody, you know, that wasn't necessarily part of the news this week from Apple, but it was sort of a tangential sort of story that I think started at GigaOm, right? About the iBeacon that's built into
iOS 7.
iOS. Well, it's also it was in 6 too, right?
I don't know about that. It was talked about at WWDC back
I'm sorry.
It needs Bluetooth. It needs the low energy, the Bluetooth 4.0.
So they're not going to do NFC.
No, they're not. They're not going to embrace NFC. And it was interesting because I it was my understanding that NFC and Bluetooth low energy were in the Moto X. Is that true, Tim? Do you know?
I know that the Bluetooth is supported in Android 4.3.
Okay.
So, but very few devices have it currently.
Well, so the only
other thing that people stick in.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find this article, but there was an article that I read, I think it was in Ars Technica, about Bluetooth low energy and NFC, and they were talking about how the processes run, the daemons that run on the phone in NFC versus Bluetooth low energy use a lot more battery.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if that's really behind this whole direction with Bluetooth low energy, because Bluetooth low energy basically just sits there until it's pinged. Then it kind of wakes up. Whereas NFC is in seek mode a lot.
I thought it only really worked when you put it in close contact with a tag.
What? NFC?
NFC.
Yeah, it does. It only works when you're in close contact. Yeah. I mean, it has to be active all the time, but it's not like it's seeking. It's just
It's just waiting. Okay. Yeah, well, we're not electrical engineers, so we're not going
to
be able
to try to act like one.
Yeah. Exactly.
But this iBeacon thing is supposed to open up a lot of opportunities for indoor mapping and proximity marketing in stores, right, Steve?
Well, that's the whole marketing push, I ended up buying a SmartThings hub and sensors so I could hook it up at my dad's house, and unfortunately he passed away before that happened. But what I really wanted was something like an iPod Touch that would have a lot of this stuff built into it, or an iPhone so it could phone home, something that he could have in his pocket all the time or around his neck, I don't know, something. But as he moved from room to room, the rooms would be smart enough to be able to do things for him, turn the lights on, you know, whatever. Or if he fell, it would phone me and so forth. And that's what I look at with the promise of this. And this GigaOm article talks about the connection of the Internet of Things with iBeacon. And this whole proximity thing is going to really be what matters. So you walk by the directory at the Mall of America, and you've already told it where you want to go, and it's just telling you. So you're navigating through the mall.
Sort of information it comes off of it from your device, though? So, you know, is this yet another way for people to give out more personal information?
Well, it could, because that's what Target's doing with their Wi-Fi and their Target app. So if you run the Target app and you walk into a Target store and you hook up to Wi-Fi, or if you just hook up to Wi-Fi once and your phone remembers, every time you walk into the store, it knows that you're back. And I don't know if the app's not running, I don't think it can do anything except maybe send you notifications if you've allowed that. But I don't know about the implementation of Bluetooth low energy, whether or not that will allow, you know, you to be pinged all the time while you're walking around in the store. Hey, buy me. Hey, buy me. Which would be really annoying.
You know, it would be targeted, though.
It would be targeted. Yeah.
One thing that I was made aware of, and this has nothing to do with iBeacon and nothing to do with NFC, I don't think, is there's a startup that's actually been around for 5 years called Aisle 411, which actually helps you find products in stores. I don't know how they do it. I went to their site and tried to figure out, but it does say it's a proprietary platform, but they just raised another $6 million and they're out of St. Louis of all places, aisle 411. But you know, do you ever go into like Home Depot or somewhere and it's like, where the hell is this one little thing I need? And you can't find anybody and you're wandering around. Apparently you enter a shopping list into this thing and it helps you go find it. The stuff.
But boy, at a Home Depot, I remember when we were growing up, I had a friend that worked at Ace Hardware, and, you know, he'd spend hours and hours writing the prices on bolts. Can you imagine putting a little sticker on every single
one? Oh, God.
Oh, man. But this indoor mapping thing is interesting, or proximity marketing, which is what, you know, maybe iBeacon is going to be more about, but you know, Apple isn't the only one working on it, obviously. I mean, this aisle 411 is using some other technology, I guess. And, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of NFC stuff going on out there, but, you know, apparently Apple is not going there.
Well, right? the question,
pretty clear.
The concern that I have is, it's another, you know, and for all of you kids in the audience, it's another VHS beta sort of a thing. So all of you kids aren't going to know what that is, but it's like, you know, we need a standard. You know, success of any technology is going to be based on the standard. So I mean, if it's important that we choose NFC or BLE, right? Don't you guys agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are we going to see, you know, obviously Android, at least 4.3 and above will deal with BLE, but, you know, will they adapt a sort of an iBeacon sort of concept as well?
Well, I think what'll happen
is, will that be a third party app?
Well, I think it'll be like FireWire, Thunderbolt, and USB. I mean, if you were going to bet on a connection technology because you were building accessories, you'd go USB 3. I mean, you're not going to build something for Thunderbolt or FireWire, because FireWire is dead anyway. But
if you look at that, Mac does supply a USB port.
Well, that's where it's I was going. Like that's where I was like going.
Yeah,
because the thing with NFC and Bluetooth low energy is you can have both. So it's in there. It's just a matter of which direction is Apple going to pursue relative to device makers and, you know, what they'll have for software development kits and everything else.
But NFC's not in iPhone.
No.
And it won't be, apparently.
And it won't be.
No.
So, there you've
but,
got. You've
but
got
it was my understanding that could be a firmware upgrade. Is that not true? Do you know, Tim?
No. You need a chip in it.
You need a chip.
Yeah. Right.
It's one of the things was the expense of the NFC chip. Yeah.
But they could have a daughter board that they stick into your iPhone, right?
Couldn't it be in that M7 chip?
No. Well, we haven't done a teardown yet, so maybe.
Right.
Those teardown guys go get in, maybe there's an NFC chip in there. But that would be really surprising, because they're not free, and Apple would not like stick one in there just for fun.
Right.
That's true.
Right, so, exactly.
So the question before we leave the whole Apple discussion and move on to some other things, who's getting a 5S, and is anybody getting a 5C?
I'm getting a 5S for sure.
I'm getting a 5S.
Just waiting for the 20th, counting it down.
Well, trying except to stay up
till, you're going to wait in line?
No, trying to stay up till midnight. On the
19th. No, 2 a.m. for us, pal. It's midnight.
Oh, that's right. Pacific. Well, then I won't be doing that. Forget that, dude. Would you do that for me, Steve?
Yeah, right.
You could set the alarm. It's okay. You could do that.
Yeah. Just send me your credit card. Just mail it over.
Good idea.
I'll take care
of it. Good idea. I like that. In fact, why don't you share it with everybody here on the podcast?
Exactly.
Why would Apple do that? You know, the 5C you could order. In fact, they opened up the pre-orders yesterday.
Well, the 5S, they wanted people lining up at the stores. You know, the publicity, that free publicity.
Yeah.
You know, I personally don't think I'm going to be doing that. Are you, Steve?
Not a chance. I don't like lines.
Are we putting you both down for gold? Is that the plan?
No, I'm going to do that. Space gray or whatever they call it.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. Yeah. We're going to do the boring one.
Yeah.
So what case are you going to get is the question, Steve. You're going to get a colored leather case? That's what I'm thinking.
No, I'm actually thinking about having the new balloon case. It comes out about 6 inches on all the way around. It's like a big ball, and you can sort of bounce it down the road while you're.
You want to make it look like you have a larger screen on your phone. Yeah.
You know. Here's the problem, though. I bought a 4S when that came out, and now here I am in the middle again. And the 4S is pretty dated, so I'm going to get a 5S. But then they'll come out with a 6 next year, and it'll probably be some amazing curved, bigger screen, you know.
Yeah,
has an invisibility cloak built into it, and you know I'll say, "Shoot, now I got to wait a year."
That's the Harry Potter edition.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we didn't. I think we sort of glossed over this: the fact that supposedly the introduction of the C was going to be this
low cost.
Yeah. We're going to blow the doors off China entry, and it's not that.
No, it's not. It's actually the same price as if they would have just said, okay, the iPhone 5 is now available for $100 less.
Right.
So exactly the same.
So what the hell's up with that?
Well, it's not a cheaper phone, though. You know? So it's they're not one to lower their prices. So they would have to make it cheaper.
Here's what I think. I think that what they ended up doing is they want the focus to be on China and then secondarily Asia Pacific overall. But I think the primary reason for this is so they can discount the heck out of it for these carriers.
They're not going to do that.
Don't you think so?
Nope.
I don't know.
Well, the China Mobile deal, we keep waiting for that to be announced. And some thought it might have been announced at the US event. It wasn't. And it wasn't announced the next day at the China event. So that's the big deal. The phone we know will work on their technology, but they still haven't come to an agreement with China Mobile apparently, but that'll blow some of the doors off as far as sales over there. But, you know, price will still be an issue because your average Chinese can't afford. It's actually $700 and some over there to buy the $549 iPhone 5C. So it's even worse than you think.
What if this new C strategy is the same and they take the 4S early next year and they make a 4C and they make that $400?
I don't know. I don't. Who knows?
Why?
Yeah.
Because they could have a off contract $400 iPhone that for these emerging markets.
Right.
That's apparently where the price needs to be. Actually, it should be like $350.
Wasn't your thought last time we spoke about this strategy that they were going to get rid of the fours? That they were only going to upgrade, you know, have two different levels of phone and not keep going back to old models for cheap.
Yeah, I'm surprised they kept the 4S around, but they did.
Right. Well, but isn't that already pretty cheap, whether here or in China, the 4S now?
No, it's $450.
Yeah.
In China?
I don't know where it's. That's what it is here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, personally, I thought. I think that's a pretty good number. In fact, I would have maybe guessed that the 5C would have come out at $499 instead of $549. And I think that would have helped. But, you know, they're just not going to bastardize their margins because the press thinks they should, you know. I mean, they aren't, you know. So, yeah. But could they drop the price in a year? Yeah. Could they do what you're saying to the 4S? Or come out with a 4C, yeah. They could. Yeah. And they probably will. They just, you know, they can't turn on a dime and act as fast as everybody wants them to act. And with the gigantic supply chain, you know, it's not easy to just do stuff
instantaneously. Let's talk about a different smartphone. So there was an article in Computer World that Google knows nearly every Wi-Fi password in the world. And this guy claims that IDC reported that 187 million Android phones were shipped in the second quarter of this year, and which works out to be 748 million phones in 2013. And that's without tablets. And he's claiming that all of your Wi-Fi passwords are backed up. And so as a consequence, Google knows all of them.
Well, I mean, that your browser knows all of your passwords. Most people have their service hooked up that'll remember passwords when they log in.
Yeah. Yeah,
of course. Yeah, you could take that all the way to the end. Of course, everybody knows everything. I mean, hasn't the recent NSA stuff made that fairly clear to everybody? That
wait, what happened with the NSA?
Well, we're talking about we've talked about it for years,
kidding.
Right?
Yeah.
Am I right? I mean, we've talked about this for years that there's nothing safe. There's nothing secret.
As a user, it's very convenient.
Yeah. I mean, it's out there. And now
change phones and you sign in and all of a sudden all of your Wi-Fi is back.
Yeah. Right.
Well, this story was based on Google knows all your stuff, you know, and well, they could be prevailed upon to tell the government wherever you've been on, whatever Wi-Fi network anywhere you've been on. And right. As I read the story, is you go out and buy a new Android phone and you go to use it and boom, it's going to have all those. It's all of a sudden it's going to remember all those passwords of all those places where you've been.
If you've backed it off the device. Yeah.
Right.
But
right.
See, but see, isn't it the same?
You went
isn't
in it, and checked that box not to back up, you know.
But isn't that the same thing if you back up to iCloud with the iPhone?
Well, that's what the article doesn't go on to say.
It doesn't.
Sure. Right. Does Apple know as much about
of course they do.
Your Wi-Fi passwords as Google does?
Of course they do.
Except you can encrypt it before it's sent.
Yeah. Encrypt.
Yeah.
NSA, they can't break encryption. No. That's really tight.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no back any of these things that, you know, Apple and Google are, you know, maybe Microsoft might be dirty.
Well, that's right.
Apple, forget it. They have not any any backdoors in for the government.
Well, you know, so Dan. Wait a second.
Things. Let's talk about real things like unicorns now, because
just listen. I have to throw this out because if you guys, if anyone listening likes Dan Brown's books, The Da Vinci Code and others, I happen to get bothered by the fact that every single chapter has a cliffhanger.
Well,
you know,
because they're not written, really, but. As hell,
yeah.
You know,
they're not books.
Read it. Got to finish.
Yeah,
they're not. They're not books. They're screenplays.
Yeah. Well, there is a book that he did called Digital Fortress, and it's really, really interesting, especially in the context of what's going on right now with the NSA. And it's about a big, gigantic, incredible quantum computer that's been built by the NSA. And that's all I'm going to say. It's a amazingly good book. I read it probably 3 years ago now. But it's pretty relevant. Anyway,
there you go.
Let's
talk a little bit about what's going on. Well, wait a minute. Before we, I think the other thing that everybody wants to talk about, and I found this really funny because I get my little notifications from breaking news from the New York Times, and I always get a kick out of. I got a kick out of this headline: Twitter confidentially files for IPO. How do you say it's confidential when it's coming to you from a New York Times notification?
Well, and everything. Yeah, about 87 other articles.
Can't you just take confidential out of that headline? But who's going to buy Twitter when it goes public?
No. Not me.
I'm waiting. Well, we'll never have access to be able to buy any. I mean,
secondary market
after it's traded for a while.
Yeah.
But you know, it'll have a good first day run up. I predict it won't be another Facebook. And then they're going to great lengths to make sure that doesn't happen, including picking a different underwriter, Goldman.
I guess I've stopped paying attention. But is Twitter making money now?
Think so. Yeah, and they're at something close to $600 million in revenues, and projecting, you know, they'll go over $1 billion next year, I guess. And they were able to do this confidential filing because they're under $1 billion in revenue, and the Jobs Act allowed them to do that confidential filing. But now everybody, all the reporters, are just itching to get at that data. And that data, it'll be interesting to see who gets hold of it first, because I know they're scrambling to try to get it. But it may not be made public until a few weeks before the IPO. And the IPO, you know, isn't going to happen until like first quarter 2014, most likely. So it may be a while before we have all the data on their business. But, you know, I predict it'll be more like the LinkedIn or Workday IPO than the Facebook IPO. I mean, those have been highly successful, the first two. Facebook's wasn't. Now they're okay, but they went through a lot of BS to get that price up to the, what was it, 38 that it came out at?
Well,
you know, I think it's now trading around 41 or something, but for the longest time, remember how it was down below 20?
Well, the only issue that I've got with any of this stuff is that if ads are inserted directly into your timeline, like they are in Facebook, what's happening is the ads are becoming less and less distinguishable from your friends' posts. And I'm going to bet there's not going to be any differentiation. So you're really going to have to look at a tweet.
Yeah, that's already happening.
Well sure it is, but
on
not
Twitter. It says promoted tweet very
clearly. Yeah, but
clearly.
But you have to look pretty closely to see that.
I don't. It jumps right out at me. And by the way, that's been extremely successful for them. That's been their most successful ad product.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? The only way to avoid it is to stop using Twitter.
True.
Well, yeah, if you don't
like
ads, then you go to that other, you know, the anti-Twitter microblog. And so what the hell is it called? I can't even remember. We haven't heard squat about that thing.
Do you use Tweetbot? Because I never see promoted tweets.
Tweet what?
Tweetbot.
Tweetbot? No, yeah. I haven't been using that much, no.
It's why,
you're able to shut it off?
Well, I don't know if I've never done anything overtly, and I'm wondering if they have simply just not implemented something in Twitter's API, but they never show up, ever.
Huh. Well, you know, I don't see them very often either.
I see them when Twitter I go to the web page, when I log into Twitter on a browser.
How often do you do that?
Well, every once in a while, if I want to go change something or look something up.
Huh. Well, yeah, I do too. And I don't see a lot of, I wonder if, does that mean we're not being targeted with these promoted tweets?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's because our checkbooks are triangulated and they know,
they know where we're at. What's in it. Yeah. They know what's in that checkbook.
Yeah. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about what's going on locally. We talked a little bit about the national big stuff. Minnesota Cup competition, winners were announced.
Yeah, another med tech company. You know, I kept wanting to say it was Perceptus Medical, but it's Preceptus Medical was the winner. Some surgical tool for pediatric ear surgery. So yeah, they just seem to love the Minnesota judges, the medical hardware kind of stuff. I guess it seems like there've been a bunch of med tech winners over the last few years.
Yeah.
I think everybody was sort of deflated, at least in my world, that KidBlog didn't win it.
You know? Yeah, but they won in the general division, right?
Oh, yeah, they did. But yeah, and they did win, what, 25K? But if they'd have won the whole thing, what did the winner get? Another 40K.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, it doesn't seem like the pure internet startups ever really win
Minnesota
Cup.
But you look at that, and you also look at the Techni Award finalists. They're all, you know, big companies that stand to make a lot of money for their, you know, for their work.
Yeah, that list is. I don't know. I mean, does that? You look at that, and you think that MHTA, it's a big company organization. I mean, they do have a startup category, and they have small company divisions in some of their categories, but a lot of them I've never even heard of, or they're little outstate outfits, you know. But
yeah, we all continue to sort of walk around scratching our heads going, what is it that MHTA does again?
Yeah, I mean, most of the startup community, I'm sorry. I mean, God bless the MHTA. I was a member back in the 80s when the thing first started, but I don't think most of the startup community really pays that much attention to what they're doing. I don't even know how many of the startups that we know even enter that competition. Like, I was wondering, did Kidblog enter the Edutech? I mean, you know, not to keep bringing up a Kidblog, but I mean, they are friends of ours. We've written about them. They influence more people numbers-wise than anybody else in any of these competitions, from, you know, with the number of people in classrooms that, what is it, 3 million plus users, 250,000 plus classrooms around the world. You know, I mean, you talk about reach. You know, now, are they making money? Well, no, that's a different topic.
That's a different
topic.
They
haven't monetized yet.
Yeah. But
anyway, a little plug there for Kidblog, you know.
a little one.
If you haven't gathered that already. But the Techni Awards, when do they do that? When are those announced? Is it later on in October sometime, or the winners?
I'm not sure.
Something like that.
I think
they,
so, yeah.
They have a big to-do, don't they? Like dinner or thing.
It was really funny that I remember that, you know, after years and years and years in broadcasting and then getting exposed to the digital community and the startup community and that sort of thing, and, you know, the whole different casual nature of gatherings, and then going to the Techni Awards, it's like, whoa. Where did all
it's
these
like
suits
the
come from? Yeah, where did these suits come from?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oh, they probably had in tuxes or something.
Yeah, but I think that's even that event has started to casual down a little bit. But it's definitely the top shelf version of tech.
So it's Thursday, November 6th.
Oh, it's that late. Okay. Yep. Yeah, it's the big
the reception.
Yeah.
And dinner happens after that, and it's at the Minnesota Convention Center in the ballroom.
In the ballroom. Always is.
And you know that by clicking on their FAQ, which is on a 1998-era PDF page.
Oh, God.
Which is crazy. I mean, who does PDFs on a website as a main page?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
It's hilarious.
And it doesn't. And the link doesn't have PDF and parens either, does it?
No.
So you have no idea before you click on it that you're going to be downloading a PDF.
Yep.
Oh, God.
There you are. But the formatting looks so good. You can't do this in HTML. Wait a minute.
I'm trying to find where's that link that you're using.
If you go to the bottom of the page on their homepage, and see an FAQ link, which, you know, you click on it and it opens up this nice PDF.
You know what? I almost spat my coffee out on when I was reading the Techni Awards page. The software category, Best Buy is one of the finalists.
Yeah. They're
But there's a company you really think of for software innovation.
Yeah.
But they seem like they have a bunch of more categories subcategories
APIs, which are kind of interesting. So maybe it's something like that.
Yeah. Say, I wanted to just bring up our buddy Aaron Weber.
Yeah.
Who launched Luma.tv, and it's an iPad app that basically delivers personalized movie and TV selections from all streaming sources, which is awesome.
So this is like a Pandora for video.
Not quite, but because you get to select your sources. But the big thing is, if you want to say what's available on Amazon, what's available on iTunes, what's available on Netflix, you know, these are the categories I'm interested in. It'll basically aggregate all your sources and allow you to go in and be alerted when something is going to be coming, so you can record it or you can stream it or whatever. So,
he's been working on this for a long time. And
yeah, what was it called before, Graham? I can't remember.
Inveni.
That's right. That's right.
Inveni.
Yep.
And I don't know what happened, if he ran into a potential naming conflict or what, but he kind of went away and went back into stealth and to develop the platform further. And gosh, it's been a year or more that he's been kind of laying low, and now he's out with the news, and it does sound pretty cool.
It's a good looking site.
If you've got an iPad, to take a look at it, because it really is, it's very cool.
And it is downloadable from the iTunes App Store now, right?
Yes, it is for free.
Okay, good, good. Yeah, I figured they wouldn't announce it till it was in the store.
Right.
So how do they make their money? Is it just ad driven or what? What's the?
Yeah, I don't know at this point. I haven't grabbed it yet, but you know, maybe they aren't saying. Sure. You know,
I'm sorry. Make money? Huh? What?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. These are minor points.
What is this money you speak of?
You know, you can't do everything for free.
Well, you know, the play is if you get enough attention and people using your app, somebody could swoop in and buy you, you know. And so, you know, but the investors out on the West Coast in the Bay Area are much more patient about these things than the local folks are. That's certainly true. You know, it takes a while to get to monetization, and some investors can wait and others aren't so patient. So we'll see where Aaron goes with his. He's got some West Coast investors behind him too, in addition to his brothers, you know, Rob and Ryan.
Well, when you sign up for it, I already had an account on Inveni, so it got grandfathered in. But when you sign up, it does ask you for your gender and your birth date. And so clearly this is being set for targeting.
Yeah. Yep. I would think so.
Yeah.
It's going to become a data play like practically every startup seems to be these days.
Do you guys balk when somebody asks you on an app to set up the app, but put in your birth date?
Do I balk?
Yeah, I mean, do you say, I'm not doing that?
Yeah, I tend to.
I just make up a date, put it in there.
Yeah.
Like it, you know, if it gets me the Denny's discount for the AARP, yeah.
Yeah, right. What or a birthday card in the mail. Oh, yeah, exactly. I love that.
Exactly. Cool. Well,
awkward silence. What's up with that?
I know. Well, because I was, you know what? I was playing with Luma on my iPad. I apologize. Anyway,
do you find this distracting?
That's right.
Watch the Dirty Dozen after the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go. And listen, Steve, you did an article over on a site for the Comcast program.
Yeah, because they're offering $10 a month internet.
But not to you.
No. This is a program that...
Not to you, Mr. I buy two cars at a time. Not to you.
Stop. It's a program that when it first came out, I actually knew a family that could take advantage of it, and they did. And I just thought, this is just fabulous. Now, they didn't do the computer because they already had one. They had a low-end computer. But, for 10 bucks a month, you know, they've got a little girl at home who's 11. And so it's perfect. She's got access to the internet and can do homework. You know, more and more kids are being asked to do things at home. And they used to have to go over to the library, which isn't that far away, but to get access. And so this is great. It's a great program.
What are the, are there like income requirements or something?
There are. Yeah. There are income requirements and,
Hello?
I'm actually looking at the press release, but there's income requirements, but also you have to have a student at home. So it's not just for, you know, any low income family.
Be eligible for the lunch program too.
Oh, okay. I did not see that. Okay.
Yeah.
So but there are a lot of families that have taken advantage of it already, right? In Minnesota.
5,200 plus. Yeah.
That's good.
Yep. So, and the family I know who shall remain nameless is one of them.
It's us.
Pardon me?
It's us.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So, Well, the only other thing that I discovered that my dental hygienist's husband works for Stratasys, and he is just, I mean, he can't keep on top of it, and they're hiring like crazy. Somebody put this in here, this 10th annual Stratasys Extreme Redesign 3D Printing Challenge is on. It's really what's cool about this challenge is that it's all about essentially replicating what already exists, but doing so in a 3D way, in a 3D printed way, and redesigning it. And I think we're going to see some pretty cool stuff coming out of people that say, hey, you know, why have that injection molded when we can just print them? Why make 1,000 of them when we can just make 10? So, be interesting to see what happens there. So, What else is going on?
Well, we got some events coming up. Should we want to talk a little bit about events coming up?
Sure. The Mobile Twin Cities. Now that's the group, right?
That's the group.
Have you gone to one of those, Phil?
Oh yeah, go to them all the time.
And what do you think?
I think they're fine. They're very broad based. Mobile Twin Cities was founded with the concept of appealing to both developers and business types just to find out what was going on in the mobile. It covers a broad amount of topics. But it's usually 20-25 people. And again, Code 42 hosts it. Code 42 hosts a lot of user groups. It was interesting. I went to the Cocoa Heads user group as well, which meets out at Thompson for developers that work in Cocoa and a lot of iOS and Mac developers. It was very interesting stuff.
And what happens at a typical meeting?
It's a whole lot of as far as Mobile Twin Cities. A typical meeting is usually two presentations. One is technical usually, and one is non-technical. And pizza is served.
Okay.
So it's just the usual user group. Same thing with the Cocoa Heads. If you go to a lot of these developer user groups, it's basically the same format, a chance to sort of hang out, talk to each other, have some food, learn a few things, and then, meet again next month. So like the investors thing, which is the first Tuesday of every month at Cocoa, Mobile Twin Cities is usually the third Thursday or third Tuesday of every month and that sort of thing. So.
Okay. Okay. And then that, the big deal Minnesota Developers Conference is coming up as well.
MDC. Very much a developer focused tech, geek sort of a thing. But that's a big event. That's from what I understand, very, Microsoft focused, but
.NET. Yeah.
Very, very .NET-ish.
Mm-hmm. So, Tim, I sent you that that note about Google having tools for creating code for Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, it looks interesting.
And you signed up for that, right?
I need to get another SD card, and then I'll stick it on there and give it a whirl.
Based on the stuff that you read, and some of these tools already, is this going to be a big leap forward with respect to the ease with which people can write code for these little devices?
I don't think so. It looks like it's a nice web development toolkit that can be run on a $35 computer. So I think it's aimed at getting kids involved.
Got it.
Okay. Programming the web. Maybe there's some web app, kind of stuff to it. So yeah, I just need to get another SD card so I can install it, because you have to put it on a dedicated SD, just like most Raspberry Pi stuff.
Okay. Well, great. Well, rather than go through all of the events, folks can look at them. The big ones that have changed, Mini Demo.
Those tickets aren't available yet. Right?
Nope. They'll make their announcement and they'll be sold out in 10 minutes.
Except if you're a community supporter like I am, you don't have to go through that.
Yep. Absolutely.
And the Mini Analytics event October 11th is getting huge. It's already north of 600 people registered. So,
oh my gosh.
Hurry up if you want to get into that one. Yeah, if you're into data at all, and certainly healthcare is the focus, but it's open to anyone interested in analytics and data science, of course. So go
for
it.
Got it.
And we're a community sponsor, Minovate is. So I will be there blogging or tweeting my head off.
Fabulous.
As you do.
As I just do, like I breathe, you know? Yeah.
So lots going on. Be sure to check out the list of events coming up on our site at Minovate.com. Right?
That's right.
Right? Anything else for the good of the order, folks?
No, other than, the next week is going to be fabulous in terms of weather, so go enjoy it.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the crisp fall temps, you know? Yeah. Leaves will start changing pretty soon.
And I'm sure we'll have more to talk about in the world of innovation here in Minnesota next week on
the Minovate Gang Podcast.
You betcha.
Take care.
See you guys.